It's Monday, August 3rd, and kids don't spread coronavirus that quickly, do they? We start here. As some schools begin to open their doors, the CDC points to an overnight camp where hundreds of kids contracted the virus.
This is kind of the nightmare scenario that most schools have.
How quickly a positive test could burst your bubble. As TikTokers say, this was savage.
You're talking about banning a platform for free expression, you know, months before a consequential election.
The tech world convulses as President Trump threatens to ban the app. And the clock is ticking on Joe Biden's biggest decision yet.
I absolutely would have not put that statement out.
The political campaign that only takes place in the shadows will take you inside the veep stakes. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com. We make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
When Dr. Deborah Birx and Dr. Anthony Fauci entered the White House briefing room back in March and gave their best guesses for how many Americans were about to die from COVID-19, no one could quite believe it. The projection was upwards of 100,000 people.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, you could make a big soundbite about it, but the fact is it's possible. What we're trying to do is not let that happen.
And in fact, when Americans quickly locked down, wore masks, the numbers started leveling off.
Hard to believe that if you had 60,000, you can never be happy. But that's a lot fewer than we were originally told and thinking.
Critics said those numbers never should have been believed in the first place.
All I hear, Dr. Fauci, is we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't play baseball.
The only thing that I can do is, to the best of my ability, give you the facts and the evidence.
Well, this weekend, the CDC put out a new projection saying the death toll will be upwards of 168,000 by the end of this month. And yesterday, amid reports that she had given President Trump too much good news, not enough strong warnings, that crucial time, Dr. Birx went on CNN to say, we are once again, as a nation, in a pivotal moment.
What we're seeing today is different from March and April. It is extraordinarily widespread. It's into the rural as equal urban areas.
I mean, as Americans, we've clearly not figured out how to contain this crisis. Or if we have figured it out, not everyone is following the same recommendations. And so critics have asked, if adults haven't figured out how to keep people around them safe, do we really expect kids to do better? We are beginning August, which means it is crunch time for school districts and parents. Big decisions are being made right now. So I want to start the show with ABC's Ann Flaherty. She's been covering every angle of how this pandemic is affecting families, schools, and in broad terms right now, where does the country stand with this pandemic?
So the pandemic was a big problem in states like Arizona, Texas, and Florida. But now we're starting to see some troubling numbers in states that are more north, like Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana.
33 states in Puerto Rico are now reporting increasing deaths, with half the country seeing the rate of positive tests rise.
That's causing some real concern. And in fact, most of the school districts around the country now are deciding whether or not to go just virtually, because they're really afraid that once they pull the trigger and start to bring students in, that the outbreak could get out of control in their communities.
The major about face from the Philadelphia School District on its plans for reopening.
Yeah, the hybrid plan, which included in-person learning right away, is now out. Today, school officials announced that the students will return to the classroom virtually.
What kind of test cases, are there test cases for authorities to look at and see how easy or hard this would be?
We already have some information from the summer, these summer camps that have been open and up and running.
Summer camp looks completely different at Shepherd's Fold Ranch this year.
We have a 14-day protocol prior to camp that they have to begin taking temperatures.
I've talked to a couple of camps that have been successful. The steps that they're taking are pretty draconian.
All campers are separated into three groups of 50 or less. They don't mingle, and if they do, they have to wear a mask and get their temperature checked three times a day.
But these are things that schools can't necessarily do.
Hello, my name's Ken O'Kelly, and welcome to YMCA Camp I Harbor at Lake Burton and Lake Allatoona.
There's a camp in Georgia that CDC looked into, and they were taking steps to try to mitigate the spread of this virus. So
what we're going to do is Molly here is going to take the temperatures of everybody in the car and your negative COVID test.
The CDC reports an outbreak infecting hundreds of children at a North Georgia summer camp.
There were about almost 600 residents who attended the camp. 344 were tested. 260 were tested positive. They think this was the result of maybe a couple people that showed up positive and weren't showing symptoms. This is kind of the nightmare scenario that most schools have. And it actually, it juxtaposes what we heard from the CDC on schools.
The agency releasing new guidance, defending the push to get children back into the classroom, saying COVID poses a low risk to kids.
My position is that the public health of the students of this nation is best served by getting these schools reopened.
And when you look at something like the CDC study, it actually says this virus spreads efficiently in a youth-centric overnight setting.
Which is scary, and when people have presented it as, you know, kids are not at as high of risk of getting this or transmitting it. Like, maybe you got to worry about the teachers in the classrooms and the teachers' lounge, but not the kids.
Well, and their risk is still low. So, I want to put that out there that their risk of getting really, really sick and ending up in the hospital is still low. But the issue is transmission. We don't understand yet how efficiently kids will spread this virus. And when you look at them in outdoor settings, they don't seem to that efficiently, but we haven't put them in classrooms yet. And when they did put them in this overnight camp together, it spread like wildfire and it shut down the camp pretty quickly. So when you're looking at these schools, you have to think, how long could they even be open? The kids might be fine, but the adults that they go home to might not be.
Despite rising hospitalizations and deaths in Georgia, parents protesting outside Atlanta, demanding the option to send their children back to school.
Well, and that there, Anne, is, I feel like, so difficult for parents to know what to do. Because if I, you know, I've seen videos of when a camp or a school does show you their protocols, you go, wow, like if I was going to send my kids somewhere, short of just keeping them home for the semester, these look legit. And yet, what do you do when kids do start testing positive at a school or a camp?
I think one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, a test result that says that you're negative is only good for that day. And it depends on what you do after that day.
I think we have to continue to work with the schools to look between the 6 feet apart, wearing face coverings, social distancing the seating, looking at changes in schedule to have different crowding.
You're only as safe as your weakest link. And if somebody is not taking those protocols seriously, then you're probably going to have a case.
The fourth school district to open in central Indiana this week already has a student who tested positive for COVID-19.
Just last week, we heard about a school in Indiana, a junior high school, that on the first day of class found out that one of their students had tested positive. They were contacted by health officials and told that everyone who had been in contact with this student sitting within 6 feet for longer than 15 minutes, they all had to go into quarantine.
We immediately pull that student from class. We isolate them in a specific place in the clinic.
Now, of course, I think the schools are very smart about saying, well, let's group the kids into small groups. So if there is a case, it only puts 20 kids in quarantine. It doesn't put 1,000 kids in quarantine. But it really does become this question of, well, if the virus is this widespread right now in the United States, you could have multiple cohorts coming down with this virus.
Wow.
And that's going to shut down a school pretty quickly if that happens. And the reality is right now, we just don't know. There's so much we don't know about how kids transmit the virus, you know, what's going to spread it through a community and so forth once these schools open.
All right. It is now August. We find ourselves with back to school season, whether that's virtual or in person. Anne Flaherty, thanks for the update.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, talk about Renegade. Is the U.S. really about to ban TikTok? With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his 3rd bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
There are lots of complaints about big tech companies, lots of concerns about privacy. But when companies like Facebook and Apple and Google showed up on Capitol Hill last week, you didn't sense any urgent, drastic measures were about to take place.
Congressman, I think it's well documented that the Chinese government steals technology from American companies.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Bezos, you're on mute.
Mr. Bezos, I believe you're on mute.
Well, those companies are all American-owned. And over the weekend, President Trump said he is considering banning one of the most popular apps to come from overseas. This caused more than 100 million users to ask, wait, what? TikTok? Would you actually take that away? It caused the global tech industry to ask whether we're about to see a dramatic shift in what Americans are allowed to access. Let's go to Luis Matsaka. She's a reporter at Wired, where she covers China, cybersecurity, and one of the hottest apps in the world, TikTok. Luis, can you just catch me up on what the last 72 hours or so have been like for people that use TikTok?
So let's actually back up a couple of months. Starting in the fall, a number of senators started bringing up concerns about TikTok's Chinese ownership.
I'd like to start with TikTok, if we could, and what they're doing with all of the data that they are collecting from American users. And for
TikTok is owned by this giant Chinese company called ByteDance.
The company has said U.S. user data is stored in the United States. But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Tom Cotton noted that ByteDance is governed by Chinese laws.
There was an investigation open to the national security concerns around TikTok. However, things really started getting crazy this weekend.
The New York Times is reporting Microsoft Corporation is looking to acquire the Chinese-owned app in a bid to alter its ownership.
You know, there were all these rumors that Microsoft was going to buy TikTok. So then the real bombshell happened, which is that on a plane, President Trump said, we're going to ban TikTok.
And the president insists that he does have the authority to ban the app. He signaled that he could take action as early as today.
That came and passed over the weekend, but there are still these concerns that the app could be banned imminently.
Well, and the people at ByteDance have said, listen, China's got its own version of this. That's up to them. The rest of the world uses TikTok, which is not subject to Chinese control. The Chinese government doesn't ask us for stuff. We store the data overseas, so we don't have to give it to them. That's always been met with skepticism by a lot of people. But, I mean, the most basic question here, first of all, is can the president ban an app if he wants to?
So the president is not really allowed to ban an app. There are a couple of different routes that he could possibly take to do so, but I don't think that any of them are necessarily super clear cut. I think that this isn't really something about TikTok specifically, but it's about worsening China-U.S. relations.
Beijing retaliating swiftly against the U.S. for closing China's consulate in Houston, ordering Washington to cease operations at its consulate in Chengdu.
And I think that TikTok has sort of become a pawn. It's something really easy that a lot of Americans are familiar with that Trump can specifically point to.
Would you recommend that people download that app on their phones tonight, tomorrow, anytime currently?
Only if you want your private information in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, and so what are the options here? Like, if the president or lawmakers won't be satisfied as long as this is held by a Chinese-controlled company, what will satisfy them short of, like, a major American company like Microsoft buying it from them?
So there are a couple of options. So the first one is that TikTok could, as we said earlier, divest its, you know, stake in the U.S. portion of TikTok and, you know, give it over to Microsoft or to give it over to a different company.
Under the new proposed deal, sources said some ByteDance investors that are based in the U.S. may be given the opportunity to take minority stakes in the business.
The other option, which I think is kind of, you know, a little bit out there, would be to invoke something called the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. And that would require Trump to basically declare some sort of national emergency over TikTok and then unilaterally under that, you know, authority, ban an app. But that would be extremely unprecedented. And for, you know, decades at this point, the United States has really prided itself on this idea that we believe in an open internet. We believe that any company that wants to succeed in technology, you know, we should be able to use it. They should be able to succeed in the open market. So it would be really unprecedented. And frankly, it would be something that China loves to do.
Well, that's my question. Like, at the end of the day, this is a video app where people make music videos. So if it gets shut down, who cares on some level, right? Like, if it's a lot of Americans' personal data being sucked up and used for possibly nefarious purposes by a foreign adversary, isn't it worth it just to say, hey, Americans are going to start, whatever, going back to Vine, or somebody else is going to make a new version of TikTok that we're going to use here? Why is it such a big deal for this app to get shut down if that happens?
I don't think it's that simple as, like, you know, getting everyone on TikTok over to a new app like Vine. There are, you know, thousands of creators at this point who get an income from the app.
I'm financially supporting my family because of this.
I'm going to continue to post more content on Instagram and YouTube.
Okay, I don't know about you guys, but I just really don't care if China knows about me. Like, maybe I should.
And you're talking about banning a platform for free expression, you know, months before a consequential election. I think that the implications are wide-reaching. It's not necessarily going to be popular among voters, and it would be this kind of really chilling precedent, you know, which is that, do we really want to be a country like China where, you know, things are banned left and right on the internet, or do we want to be an open country where, you know, anything that succeeds should be able to do so, you know, unilaterally? It's kind of, I think it would be a really slippery slope, because there are a lot of other apps in the U.S., which you might not realize, apps and services and companies that are also owned by China. I think that TikTok has kind of become the most prominent in a way, but it's certainly not the only one.
All right. That is Luis Matsakis from Wired. Luis, thanks for walking us through this.
Thanks for having me.
You know what August 3rd means, right? It means we're exactly 3 months from Election Day. Perhaps more pressing, that also means we're exactly 2 weeks from the Democratic National Convention. And that means Joe Biden needs to pick a running mate already.
I'm going to try to figure out how to trick you all so I can meet with him in person. You got Cruz outside my house. I don't think it matters, actually.
Originally, we learned that choice would come this week, but now it looks like we might not know Biden's choice for a bit longer. Let's go to ABC's Deputy Political Director, Mary Alice Parks. Mary Alice, how big of a choice is this for Joe Biden, and what's factoring into it?
Yeah, Brad, this is definitely crunch time. The former vice president is very aware that he is running out of time to pick his running mate.
I'm going to have a choice in the first week in August, and I promise I'll let you know when I do.
But look, he has said he's going to make up his mind this week, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to share his decision publicly with us this week. Yeah, the campaign is saying it could get bumped a week, but it will definitely have to take place before the convention.
There's a deep bench, and he himself indicated that there were, I believe, 4 African-American women that he was considering. And
there's a lot of signs pointing to him picking a woman of color, and that just makes this decision historic. We don't know for sure. There are some other women like Senator Elizabeth Warren that are still on that short list.
Joe Biden knows that
at its core, the fight to protect consumers is a fight to get rid of corruption in Washington.
But this is a big decision for him, frankly, because of his age. He is already one of the single oldest candidates ever to have run.
Right.
There is even more pressure and more scrutiny and more thought given to a running mate.
Before you go, I have to ask you about the vice presidential search by Joe Biden. You've made no secret of the fact that you're prepared to serve if asked, but have you been interviewed by his team? Are you being vetted?
I will say that vetting conversations need to be had with the Biden team.
Let's talk about some of the contenders then, because I feel like everyone was kumbaya a few months ago when Biden was like, yeah, she seems cool. Oh, she's great too. I feel like this is the moment where like opposition research starts getting tossed around, right? So where is that all coming from and what's the most damaging? Who are we talking about?
Yeah, this is really interesting. When everyone's feeling the pressure and they feel like there's only a few days left for him to announce his decision, opposition research comes flying from all different directions.
Democrats are worried. If you pick Kamala Harris, you in some ways have you know, put her ahead in the 2024 conversation because, you know, Joe Biden may not run for a second term.
So, for example, Senator Kamala Harris, she's been at the very top of this shortlist for a long time. She's a national figure, has quite a following of her own. You remember just how well she did during the primary.
There was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools, and she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
But there's a lot of Democrats that are expressing some anxiety about whether she can actually energize young voters. And that is really what Joe Biden needs. He struggled with those younger voters during the primary.
The Church of Scientology, I know, has made a difference because your creed is a universal creed.
We're also seeing some opposition research kind of floated previous statements from Karen Bass, the congresswoman from California. She definitely didn't have the same national profile a few weeks ago as someone like Senator Harris.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I feel like a lot of Americans don't know much about Karen Bass, Mary Alice. Why did she become like such a big name so quickly?
Right. She's definitely well known here in Washington. She's the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus.
I also see myself as a person that tries to heal, not divide.
And I think that, look, the fact that she's not as well known could play in her favor. It's kind of a double-edged sword, right? People can get excited about something new. They like to get to fall in love with someone they didn't know that well again. On the other hand, because she's not as well known, we're seeing some of her past statements, past positions kind of come up in the last few days as reporters and Democrats dig around and look at her record.
Shouldn't you have known by then that Castro's death was not a great loss to the Cuban people?
I absolutely would have not put that statement out.
And similarly with Senator Tammy Duckworth.
If you look at the Senate, there are more white men named John than there are senators of color.
She is really well known here in Washington. She has an incredibly powerful backstory. She was a combat veteran, wounded in theater. Unlike all the other women on the shortlist, she brings that military experience, just incredible foreign policy chops.
So I would do whatever I need to do to help Joe Biden get elected.
But she hasn't been in the national conversation in the same way. So some of her past positions are definitely being poked and prodded right now among Democrats.
Well, and last question for you. Can we talk about how COVID is kind of impacting a lot of this? Because, like, for example, with a VP pick, normally you'd expect Joe Biden would be talking to these people behind the scenes in a lot of in-person meetings. Maybe he trots them out at a rally. Well, no one's having rallies anymore. And last time we saw President Trump have this big rally in Tulsa, I mean, a former Republican candidate has now died from COVID who was at that rally not wearing a mask. So what do the actual campaigns look like on the ground at this point in the age of COVID-19?
You're exactly right. We're looking at two entirely different campaigns. Only one campaign is holding regular in-person events. The Trump campaign just looks much more traditional these days. They have staff on the ground that's doing in-person voter registration, holding small gatherings of veterans or moms, small working groups. Whereas the Biden campaign is trying primarily to stick to a virtual campaign. Everything's digital. They're holding digital Zoom fundraisers still. We just don't know if that's going to cut it. It's really risky at this point right for Joe Biden to stay in a virtual space. But look, it's plenty risky for the Trump campaign, too.
A new ABC News Ipsos poll out Friday found that 66% of Americans disapprove of Trump's handling of the coronavirus.
It's plenty risky for the Trump campaign to be kind of flippant and flagrant about a lot of advice from the administration around health concerns.
And we'll see how that affects the conventions as well, just 1 week apart, starting a couple weeks from today. Mary Alice Parks, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. You know, right as everyone was talking about TikTok security a couple weeks ago, there was this massive Twitter hack.
Everyone from Kim Kardashian to former President Barack Obama compromised in a massive Bitcoin scam.
You remember this? It put everyone on pins and needles. The thinking was, Twitter is so big and the accounts that got hacked are so important. I mean, this has to be the work of a big foreign government.
It's sort of out of the playbook of China, Russia, and some other places.
Instead, authorities say this is the work of a 17-year-old in Florida.
17-year-old Graham Ivan Clark was, prosecutors said, the mastermind of the Twitter attack that caused widespread outages for verified users.
According to state authorities, this is a young man in Tampa who managed to get his hands on the information of a Twitter employee and used that to get the keys to the kingdom.
It could have destabilized financial markets, both in America and across the globe.
Now, on one level, this was not the worst-case scenario. Instead of destabilizing world markets and making huge stock trades, people saw sketchy tweets from Barack Obama and Elon Musk, inviting them to send Bitcoin in exchange for more Bitcoin. I mean, to most people, this looked like just a weird scam. But other people did send money. Authorities say this BitCon took in more than $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. Twitter has said dozens of users' private messages were accessed.
Make no mistake, this was not an ordinary 17-year-old. This was a highly sophisticated attack.
But if you thought foreign intelligence teams were the only ones with the wherewithal to hack a site as big as Twitter, maybe it's time for you to activate that two-factor authentication on your phone. Also raises questions over whether stuff like this is less secure as more employees work from home. Because it stinks to get catfished anytime. It stinks even more when you have the keys to the controls of Twitter. Hey, if you'd like to help the show, what really helps us out is 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Let the people know out there. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.